And looking ahead to Thursday, pleasant with clouds and sun, with a high temperature of 80 degrees, a low temperature of 64 degrees.
Hey, honey, this paint party is a great idea.
Yeah. Hey, how about a coffee break?
Your coffee? Better wait till they finish, hon. We don't want to lose them now.
What you doing?
Oh,
sandwiches. Good.
Oh, I see. Everything's going just great.
Everything but my coffee.
Mrs. Olson, how do you make good coffee?
There are no shortcuts, so I use Folgers.
Why?
Different coffees taste different, and I think Folgers taste best.
Really?
It's specially blended.
Folgers? I thought I'd tried everything. What's mountain grown?
Oh, the richest coffee there is. Try some.
Okay.
Hey, smells good. Your coffee?
Yep. How's it taste?
Great. Hey, everybody! Coffee break!
Get Folgers, mountain-grown coffee. You'll like the flavor.
And you'll like this show even better. It is time for Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. Drum roll, please. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're going to have an informative, entertaining, educational, and otherwise splendiferous show this morning. Current time, 16 minutes after 10 in the a.m. If I sound a little bit hungry, it's because after this show, I get to go to the brand new Ponderosa here in Marion. And assure you, when I go to a buffet, I get my money's worth. I can't wait to go and have some of their delicious food. So cool that they've opened up all-you-can-eat buffet and steakhouse in the great city of Marion. So I'm eating there next. So that's why I sound a little bit excited and maybe a little bit hungry. You might ask, what do we do here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam? Well, last hour, we had the Adam the Computer Guy radio show where we talked today's top technology topics, and I had a guest on who's on regularly. His name is Nick CJ. He's in Wales, in Brecon, beautiful little town in eastern Wales in the United Kingdom. We talked about gender equality in the technology world, some of the newest ramblings and rumblings and tumblings in technology, and always left time for a wisecrack or two. He'll be back more than likely on a future show in the very near future. On this show, we talk anything and everything. Of course, we can talk about computers because they're an important part of our world, but we talk about politics and sports and religion, current events, the eclipse, or anything else that's on your mind or mine. And today we're joined by a frequent guest to this show, a good friend of the station, very knowledgeable, erudite gentleman. His name is Dr. Ronald Feynman. He is a fine curator of information related to U.S. presidents, American history, and almost anything else. Ron, how are you today?
Hi, Adam. I'm doing fine. How are you today?
Somewhat superb for summer, I suppose. Anyway, Ron, you recently came back from a brief, not a very long flight, from South Florida to Washington, D.C. You flew JetBlue, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, yes.
Didn't fly
the best airline there is.
Right, didn't fly United, thank goodness. And you visited
visited
your son, and you took in some of the monuments, events, and historical landmarks of our great nation's capital.
Yes, it is the best city in the country as far as tourism. I don't think there's any better. And what we did is we spent time at the African American Museum. Had to get tickets 3 months ago online, literally, because you cannot just walk in. You have to actually order it online. They're free, but you have to order it online 3 months ahead of the date you want, at the beginning of May for August, for instance. And we also went to the Holocaust Museum, which was, of course, very sobering. Both of them were sobering because the African American Museum, of course, dealt with the issue of slavery and segregation and lynching and all the horrible stuff that has happened and how racial progress, while it has been made, is far from indeed accomplished completely. And the Holocaust, of course, really went into detail, on the whole issue of World War II, the Nazis, and the Final Solution. And at the same time, we also went to Arlington National Cemetery, and we visited the John F. Kennedy grave with Jacqueline Kennedy, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, his wife, and also the William Howard Taft, grave site, because William Howard Taft is the only other president other than John F. Kennedy buried lying in state at the Arlington National Cemetery. And of course, on the market for Taft, it is pointed out he was not only President of the United States, but Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the only president to have been in both positions.
So definitely, during that rather brief vacation, you took in a lot of sights.
Yes, and we also saw the movie Dunkirk at the same time, a really good movie. I'd recommend it.
Did you sleep at all? Sounds like you were there 26 hours a day.
I did overnight, but I must admit that at my age, it's hard to be active so much. I did a lot of walking. My oldest son, David, said we had walked 6 miles on Saturday and 3 miles on Sunday, and that's not my normal amount of walking, so my feet ache, but I can live with it. It's just, it's not easy, but it's a good opportunity to get some exercise.
So you weren't visiting D.C. maybe because you thought you'd be president someday and taking in the sights of your new hometown. You were just looking at some of the attractions.
Well, I mean, honestly, in my own mind, I would wish my oldest son, David, could be someday the first Jewish president of the United States, but he has no such ambitions. He would laugh if he heard this, and I just hope we have presidents in the future who are living on this planet, not on another alien planet, as our president is right now, I think.
I think he's on a 17-day golfing vacation.
And yet he claims he would never take vacations. You know, he has that famous event in March of 2016 where he said he would take no vacations. But actually, all presidents need a break. And even being away from the White House does not mean you're on vacation. You still have to be kept up to date on what's going on. So he made a big deal out of the so-called vacations of Obama, who took very short vacations and did not golf anywhere near as much as Trump. But that's, of course, part of Trump's, alternate reality. He can say whatever he wants. It doesn't have to be true. But there always will be those who follow him who will believe everything he says, which is terrifying, really.
Because one thing I've wondered, Ron, and you would probably know a bit about this, don't presidents vacation at Camp David? Has Trump ever been to Camp David? Does he just go to his golf resorts? I figured you'd know more about that than I would, so I thought I'd ask you.
He's been to Camp David, I believe, one weekend. But, you know, in his own mind, apparently even the White House is not such a great place to be because of Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, and his place in Bedford, New Jersey, apparently is much fancier and larger than the White House. So he's already bad-mouthed, although he denies it, but he did, apparently, and then he just lied about it. He has bad-mouthed the White House. And I think Camp David is not some place he really sees as a place he wants to spend much time on. But earlier presidents have. And, of course, an interesting little piece of trivia is Camp David is named after David Eisenhower, President Eisenhower's grandson, who was about 6 years old when, indeed, it was changed the name from Shangri-La, which it had been known as under FDR and Truman, to Camp David, and it's remained that way. And that is an excellent question to have on Jeopardy, I think, because a lot of people would not know who Camp David is named after.
And I would be one of them, but you certainly would know, and you would impress people all over the world.
Well, David Eisenhower himself now is about 70, 71 years old. He's, of course, married to Julie Nixon Eisenhower, Richard Nixon's younger daughter. And it's interesting, as we talk today, August 8th, this is the day that we knew that Richard Nixon was resigning. He actually, made the speech tonight on August 8th and resigned at 12 noon on August 9th. So we've come to the 43rd anniversary of Nixon's resignation from office.
And I read, Ron, that during Trump's vacation, they are renovating the White House. They've actually packed up some of the pictures and some of the rooms, and they're going to be doing some, I guess, some drywalling, fixing the HVAC. There's a leak in one of the ceilings. So
yes,
he's over-dramatized the condition of the White House. I mean, the house is, what, 200-plus years old?
That's correct. Actually, the major renovation came under Harry Truman, where he was actually out of the White House for a while. Because of the renovations, not just 17 days, but there also were renovations earlier on to Theodore Roosevelt. So over time, there is a need for renovations, yes, but this is a minor renovation. It will be resolved in the next 2 weeks.
And D.C., unlike South Florida, is a four-season climate like it is here in Ohio. Summers are hotter than they are here and more humid, and winter not quite as cold as it is here, but it definitely would not be shorts and sandals weather there in January.
Well, my son who lives there, David, has said that the weather has been much more extreme in Washington, D.C. in the 10 years he's lived there. And I think this is all, of course, part of a whole story of global warming and climate change. But Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who's over 80 years of age and doesn't have to worry about the future, keeps on claiming there is none. There is no climate change or global warming. And, of course, he comes from an oil state, Oklahoma, you know, and, of course, they're involved in fracking now, and there's been a lot of earthquakes there, but nobody seems to think that's something to worry about. But, I mean, it's just denial. It's beyond belief, really, how many people deny climate change and global warming.
The heating and AC system is like 30 years old in the White House, and that's about twice as long as they normally last, at least here in Ohio. So it's reasonable to think that that kind of handyman work would not be applicable, as that stuff has a finite life and must be maintained. So while the President Donald is golfing, they'll be doing some renovations and making the White House into the historic mansion that it is and has been and will be for quite a while.
Yes, last year, the three of us, David, Paul, and myself, went to the White House and visited. It was really a great experience, you know, to be in the White House.
Now, they've, of course, beefed up security since 9/11. How does that affect the ability
absolutely,
to...
Yes, yeah, necessary, of course.
I mean,
as I write about in my book, Assassinations, Threats to the American Presidency, from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama, absolutely necessary, yes.
You didn't see Mr. Obama, I presume, or his family, but did you get close to where he was working, or was he in the White House at the time you were there?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think he was there, but my son did once meet him and actually get a photograph of him up close, you know, using his cell phone as he was shaking hands with the president, and it really looks great. I saw it in his apartment. It's really a wonderful photograph.
I guess you also noticed, and I noticed this when I was in D.C., that the traffic is horrendous, and you might expect being a major city, and Baltimore and Washington are almost like the same metro area, so that entire megapolis is a recipe for a lot of traffic. But do things seem kind of expensive there in D.C.? I mean, I'm not sure what it's like in Boca Raton, but it seems like everything was twice as much as it is here in Ohio. And with the traffic, the whole lifestyle is different. You really do feel like you're in a big metropolitan area, which almost never ends.
Well, it was a sleepy town at the time of World War II, a sleepy southern town, but it's become a major center of growth, and the Virginia suburbs and the Maryland suburbs and D.C. are very expensive for real estate, and it keeps on growing, and the cost of living is very high, as it is also in New York and Boston, and also in L.A. and SF. The coastlines are much more expensive than the interior. There's no question about that.
But you feel that the historic value and the beauty of the area, and that it's close to almost everything and there's great air travel, that makes it still an attractive place to visit and then possibly live as long as you have a good job.
Yes, of course, you have to have a good job or else have lots of money if you're in retirement, you know, and live there. And there are a lot of people, I noticed, who seem to be senior citizens. So I think a lot of people do choose to live there. Either they have all along or they choose to live there because it's near all the cultural sites, all the, you know, the Library of Congress is there, the Smithsonian Institution, all of its different museums is there, the National Archives is there, all the memorials are there. And now the African American Museum is the newest one. And, of course, there are plans not yet finished, but being pushed to have a National Women's History Museum. Hopefully, that will soon be starting to be developed because I think we really need that.
We've talked, Ron, that you visited nearby Cincinnati, and as a fellow baseball fan, you enjoyed going to the Cincinnati Reds Hall of Fame
and the William Howard Taft historic site. Also, I visited. Yes,
and as I'm sure you know, Cincinnati was a big stop on the Underground Railroad, and there was an Underground Railroad Museum.
Yes, and we went to that also. My son Paul and I did go there, yes.
How does that compare to the African American Museum in D.C.? Are they similar in some regards? Or is it good to visit both and get a full idea of the history? I would say visit both.
Obviously, the African American Museum is much larger. It's got so many different floors. I would say it's greater, but the Underground Railroad Museum was very much worthwhile, and it really had an impact on me. All these visits help me when I teach or lecture to understand better, rather than just reading about it, to see these sites. And so, definitely Cincinnati, I would recommend as a place for people to visit. No question about it. And the Reds are a good team most of the time, and their stadium is really great.
Would you tend to believe that maybe our president should also take in some of these sites, and maybe if he would appreciate the historic nature of D.C., he would enjoy living there more? It seems like he doesn't really like like D.C., that he prefers his golf courses and his stuff in New York City, the Trump Tower, etc. Or should it be almost required that...
Knowledge of history is horrible, absolutely horrendous, and he needs to have some understanding of the story of American history, what really happened, and it worries me that he is so ignorant, and also on science, with the whole issue of global warming and climate change. It's beyond belief that he is working to gut the Environmental Protection Agency. What he should do is fire Scott Pruitt, but he's not going to do that, of course, and that, I think, is one of the most devastating things of the Trump presidency, this attack on the whole idea of preparing for the future.
I mean, I would think that obviously there are security considerations, and Obama was a senator, so certainly he had been in D.C. many times, but George W. Bush was mostly in Texas, where he was a governor, and he was an owner and manager of the Texas Rangers baseball team, so I don't know specifically what he and his family did during their off time, and again, what the security considerations are, but I would think that a president should know about D.C., know where he lives, and get an appreciation of the area, and really appreciate how important his job is. There have only been 45 presidents, and that's been since the 1700s.
Well, actually, technically, there's only been 44, because Grover Cleveland was 22 and then lost, although he won the popular vote. He's one of those cases where the popular vote winner loses. And then he defeated the person who defeated him, Benjamin Harrison, so he's listed as 22 and 24. So actually, there were 44 presidents, but because Cleveland is 22 and 24, we say that Trump is the 45th president, but it's really actually only 44.
Yeah, it's always been controversy. Is Cleveland two presidents or one? I guess you would say 44 people have served, but there have been 45 presidents. Kind of depends on how you look at it.
Well, one could also joke that Cleveland is the second heaviest president, so that he could be two James Madisons.
Right, and I guess I hear
the lightest president.
The Donald,
but then, of course, William Howard Taft could be three, I guess, if by that basis. Right. He's the heaviest president.
And the Donald also is one of our largest presidents. He's tall,
third
but...
heaviest, Donald right, Trump. Right. Yeah, behind Taft, who is, you know, and then Grover Cleveland, yes.
I mean, he's like 6'1", 6'2", so he's somewhat tall, but... He probably needs.
I think he's actually more than six. I think he's 6'3" or so. But he is considered to be, overweight. And of course, his ego is larger than anything else, as we know.
I think the extra inch refers to his poofy hair, though. So he's just 6'1" or 6'2".
Yes.
But certainly, being president, I mean, all joking aside, is a stressful job, and it's good to be in shape. Both Bushes were even the elder Bush, he still exercised. He jumped out of an airplane when he was 90, I believe, and. Both Bushes were big on fitness. Obama certainly, I would say, had a better physique than Mr. Trump does. And it's stressful work, and you have to be in shape.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump has said that he doesn't believe in exercise. He thinks exercise is moving his hands when he speaks. That's what he actually has said, so it's quite laughable, but he is not a believer in exercise. He's made it clear, and he likes fast food at times, which we all can like, but I think he has too much of it, and he has too much ice cream, apparently. The story goes that he gets ice cream before everybody else, and twice as much, at least that's what I've read. I'm assuming that's not fake news, although maybe some will say it is.
Yeah, we've all had the grandma who smoked and was overweight and drank and lived till she was 90. My grandma lived well into her 70s, and she was overweight, and she smoked unfiltered cigarettes. But you got to stay healthy, because you never know where your gene pool lies. And president, again, Donald Trump is 71 years old. He's not the best physical specimen in the world, so I think he does need to hit the gym and maybe stop eating all those greasy foods.
I don't think he's going to listen to you, but he's going to keep on tweeting. That you can be sure of. That's exercise for him, I guess. Hitting the cell phone.
Yeah, I guess his fingers are probably very limber.
A tweet.
Right, but I mean, I certainly hope he has good health, and I think it sets an example too.
Well, absolutely, it's important that he stay in good health, but I don't think he is in very good health, certainly not mentally, the way he acts. You have to wonder about his mental stability, and it's very scary. It's not only about for him, but for the country at large.
We are speaking with Dr. Ronald Fineman here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. Adam, of course, being me, Adam Lepper, also known as Adam the Computer Guy. We talk about almost anything and everything on this show, discussing Dr. Fineman's recent visit to the nation's capital, visiting with his sons, who are both in their 30s, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Taking in some of the sights and sounds of District of Columbia. Ron, did you talk to your sons about your sort of new career in radio? What do they think about that? Have they listened to your radio appearances?
Yes, I have, and they think it's great, and they hope that I will continue to be able to do this, and I would love to do it, because I think I have something to share. And beyond writing, I write on History News Network a lot. I have a new article out this week on Can We Count on the GOP to End the Trump Presidency, my most recent article. But between that and my blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and doing some teaching, I also like to speak, and, you know, also in lectures, but also on radio. So I do appreciate this opportunity that your station has given me.
Now, we're a little station with some pretty big shows. Again, Scott Spears has talked to Bob Barker and Monty Hall and talked to Eleanor Clift yesterday, a commentator that you and I both admire. So we have great guests on the station.
Eleanor Clift is great, yes.
And we broadcast all over the world by the magic of the internet. But there are stations that you can get on the air for a radius of hundreds of miles, and that would include KMOX in St. Louis, and you've been on that station with John Grayson a few times.
Yeah, well, John Grayson has now switched stations, but I've been on with John Grayson at both his old channel and his new channel, yes.
What's it like being on a 50,000-watt AM station, Ron, and how does he compare to myself and Scott here at WWGH?
Well, I don't judge based on the size of the station. I base it on the interviewers. And in my mind, seriously, I think you and Scott Spears are great. I think John Grayson also is. I'm very happy and proud to be associated with all three of you.
And you mentioned your sons are quite intrigued and impressed by your foray into the radio broadcasting world.
Yes, and I'm intrigued by it because I always wanted to do this, and now I have the opportunity, so I really do appreciate it.
You wrote in your blog, progressiveprofessor.com, yesterday, Ron, that General John Kelly, the new White House chief of staff, is trying to get rid of those who are causing disarray in the Trump White House, and it seems that at some point he will be able to fire Stephen Bannon and Stephen Miller.
I hope.
I guess we have too many Stevens, both of the alt-right persuasion, as the only way to get control of the chaotic situation in the Oval Office. Now, Ron, as we've talked about, and I think most people would agree, Trump is not a traditional Republican, and that could be good, that can be bad. Me, I'm an independent, so I never fully understood the idea of political parties anyway, but we both would be of the agreement that he is alienating, obviously, Democrats, but also alienating his fellow Republicans, and that's causing
and conservatives,
trouble.
Too. Not just Republicans, but also people. This last article I published talks about the National Review, the Weekly Standard, and the Wall Street Journal. Not everybody, but an awful large number of people who work at those three major conservative media are antagonized, and I have a whole list of like 43 conservatives who have come out against him, including some everybody has heard of, like Glenn Beck is one such case, David Brooks is another one, and David Frum is a third one, and Jonah Goldberg is a fourth one, Margaret Hoover, who is a great-granddaughter of Herbert Hoover, is a fifth one, Robert Kagan, Charles Krauthammer, Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard is certainly been a big critic, Rich Lowry of the National Review, I'm just picking a few people out here, also Peggy Noonan is another one, and Karl Rove, of course, who worked for George W. Bush, Jennifer Rubin of the Washington Post is another one, and we could add Ken Starr, the prosecutor involved with Bill Clinton, imagine 20 years ago, Nicole Wallace, and George Will. That's just like 15 I've given you, but it's like a list of 43 plus all these people in the intelligence community, also Republican senators and some Republican House members. So he has a lot of people alienated from him, and the question is, will this lead to eventually him being, forced to resign or being forced out by impeachment? I would think it is going to happen, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Now, Ron, as a president, you have to align yourself with Democrats or Republicans and other offices, for example, a mayor, even a rather large city, and some cities have mayors like this. You can be an independent or be of a third party, as I am. Again, I don't align myself with either parties because my beliefs kind of go all over the place. But do you feel that a president should, and I'm saying he because all of our presidents have been men, but hopefully that'll
yes.
change at some time. Do you feel that a president should align and be a cheerleader, be an advocate for his party? I believe also the president is also considered to be the leader of his particular party. And
yes, it should be that way. I want to point out my earlier article, these two presidents also have bad starts, talks about two presidents who came in by succession, different than Trump, John Tyler and Andrew Johnson, and ended up alienating both parties. And in the case of Tyler, he had an impeachment vote, which failed. But in the case of Andrew Johnson, there was an impeachment vote that led to an impeachment trial. He was found not guilty. So there is a comparison that can be made between Tyler and Andrew Johnson and Donald Trump as far as alienation from parties. And I, you know, the fact is Tyler had all kinds of grief, although he made it to the end. Johnson had much greater grief. And I think the future for Donald Trump is not good.
So you want to get along with everybody because Congress is obviously very bipartisan, plus governors and everybody else. But you are pretty much the leader of your party, even if you might not agree on all the issues. And human beings aren't going to agree every single time. But
well,
at least,
of course not. I want to point out that I'm doing an article now I'm hoping to get published about the fact that we've never had in modern times a Democratic president who at first flirted with the Republicans. But we have the opposite true. We've had now four Republican presidents who flirted with the Democrats. They had connections. Herbert Hoover had connections to Woodrow Wilson. Eisenhower had connections to Truman, who was even encouraged by Truman to run for president in 1948. And he, Truman, would be his running mate, although he was already president, which is startling. Ronald Reagan, of course, have been a New Deal Democrat, supported FDR and Truman, and then, of course, Donald Trump had been a Democrat over the years and had certainly given a lot of money to Hillary Clinton and, and also many other Democrats, including Bill Clinton and others. So they all had Democratic linking, I guess you say leanings or flirtation, but they all ended up being Republicans, but they also all ended up being sort of like independent, Reagan less, but the others being independent of the party structure. Even Hoover was not very good at working with his party structure, and certainly Eisenhower got along better with Democrats, actually, with Lyndon Johnson and Sam Rayburn, because the Democrats controlled Congress 6 of his 8 years. Reagan, however, was able to work with Tip O'Neill on Social Security, but I'm saying they all were sort of like flirting with Democrats in their earlier lives, and then they became Republicans. But that is not the same for Democratic presidents. There's no such case.
Of course, with Eisenhower, like Trump, he came in without any direct elected government experience, but he was, of course, in the military. He was a general. So do you think maybe if a president doesn't have a lot of political experience that might cause him to get along better with both parties because he's not seen that culture in Washington? Is that logical?
Well, in the case of Eisenhower, it certainly worked. I want to point out Herbert Hoover had been in government jobs, including Secretary of Commerce, great Secretary of Commerce under Harding and Coolidge, but he was never elected to anything other than president. He was always appointed position. So only Reagan, of those four I've mentioned, actually had elected experience as governor of California. And I think that probably helped him to work with the opposition more than might have been ordinary.
Right. Ron, do you see Trump as being very conservative, or like a lot of people, you think he's kind of independent, kind of does his own thing? And it's not really a case of independent versus Republican. It's just he is an outsider. And, you know, whether or not you agree with him, he's going to be eclectic in his views and not always align himself.
Yes, but I think he's starting with the right wing, a great amount of conservatism. But yet many conservatives think he's not a conservative. They think of him as anarchistic in many ways, that he's dangerous to the institution of the presidency, that he's undermining the respect for the office. So it's ironic that you might say many of the things he's trying to do are conservative ideas, but some of them are to the right of conservatism. That's why some people think there's an element of fascism. When you look at Stephen Bannon and Stephen Miller, they often are considered fascist types, this alt-right group. And the way that Miller acted at that time with the media, when he berated the CNN correspondent Jim McCosker about the immigration bill that was being promoted, was outrageous. And now there's discussion or possibility being mentioned he could become the new communications director to succeed Scaramucci. That is absolutely crazy.
Now, in the case of his vice president, whom we both think will probably at some point become president by the removal of Mr. Trump from the Oval Office, obviously Mike Pence is, without question, a conservative. He's very conservative with respect to social issues, which you might call the religious right.
Yes.
He's conservative economically, which for the most part I like, although I think he might be a little more conservative than what my tastes would bear. And was there a reason, you think, why he chose such a conservative as vice president? Did it balance out the fact that some people think Trump may not be a true Republican, or that he wants to satisfy the desires of people that vote Republican because they are conservative economically and socially? Was that the logic, or is that being a little too analytical?
I don't know if he had any logic, because he was hemming and hawing about who he picked. And apparently after he chose him, there was some kind of a statement that he had doubts that maybe he made a mistake that he made privately, and it came out, unless it's a leak that isn't true. But I think Pence has been very loyal to him, and that's good in a way, and it's bad in a way, because I think it does scar Pence a bit if he succeeds. Is he going to follow everything that Trump did? I would not think so. He's more major conservative establishment. He's not outside the structure. He, after all, was a House leader before he went off to become governor of Indiana. So I think Pence is certainly more stable. But as I've already written, I think he'd be the most conservative president since Calvin Coolidge, maybe more than Coolidge, certainly more than Reagan, I think. Because even Reagan, as conservative as he was, did bend more. And I don't think from Pence's background, although you never know if he's in the White House, that he would bend. So he might be more conservative than any president since Coolidge, or possibly even more than Coolidge.
Issues aside, Ron, would you agree with me that Penn certainly needs to grasp the concept of separation of church and state, probably the same thing that your senator there, Mr. Rubio, needs to do? And I think if he did that, he might not be bad. I mean, he's an intelligent man. He certainly has more couth, out of lack of a better term, than Mr. Trump.
Couth, I like that.
And if, I think if he did understand...
Yeah, I do think that Pence is too connected to what I call right-wing Christian extremism of the evangelical right, and I think that is not good. We should have separation of church and state, and I do not think we should have religion in government. It's something that should be separate, but unfortunately his record is that he is very strong on that, and that is, to me, the major fault I see in him more than anything. But he is certainly more stable and more predictable than Donald Trump. I think he would stabilize the situation if he became president. But there are other problems, you know, as such as this issue of Christian extremism.
So in terms of his conduct, he certainly would do a better job. And you and I may not agree economically. I'm more conservative. But we would agree that he has the tools more than Donald Trump does to be president. If he could grasp the concept of separation of church and state, which hopefully he would do in time, but who knows?
I doubt he will. But I do think he is more qualified to be president based on his experience and background. That I would agree.
Now, I mentioned your Senator Marco Rubio, and certainly he's known as a rather religious person who's not afraid to disseminate what he believes. He is younger than Pence. He's in his 40s, I believe. And yes. We were talking a little bit that I was rather impressed with the way he speaks. I thought he's someone who had some good ideas. If he could learn about separation of church and state, that he might in the future be good at a higher office. And I guess you would know more than I would, since he is your senator, and your opinion wasn't quite as glowing as mine. And we do agree on the separation of church and state issue, but
yes.
You don't think that Rubio would be a good president or vice president? It has to do with his work ethic and maybe some other things?
Well, I'll tell you, during the campaign, you know, he was ridiculed by Chris Christie. He was repeating the same point over and over and over. And honestly, I am not overly impressed with his intellect. I just don't think he's that smart. I think Pence, while I dislike a lot of what he stands for, is smarter. But I don't see Rubio as capable to be president. No, I don't. I can see that he represents a new group, Hispanics, you know, that would have a chance to be in government and be in the White House. It would be interesting for that. But I do not think Rubio has the capability. And look, he didn't even want to be senator. He originally was running saying, I don't want to run for the Senate again. Then when he could not be, nominated and even lost his state to Trump and massively, except for Miami-Dade County, then he suddenly starts to run again and he defeats Patrick Murphy. But honestly, he already had repudiated that he wanted to be in the Senate, and then the last minute he runs and he wins. But to me, he has no principles that I think make him worthy of being president.
So a thought that I had, and this would of course help with the Latino vote and help with the battleground state of Florida, that Pence probably would not choose Marco Rubio as his vice president if he does become president after Trump's leaving the office. So that probably isn't
going to
happen.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Who would he pick? That would be interesting. It's hard to figure out. I know who I would wish he would pick if he became president during this term. I think he should pick John Kasich. But since John Kasich is much more mainstream, I'm not sure he would do that. But that would be a good backup, John Kasich. And actually, I do think if he is not picked, John Kasich will probably be a candidate for president against either Pence or Trump in 2020, as the New York Times article indicates.
You got to love John Kasich. I mean, our Ohio governor, with his persistence, he has run for president many times and had many offices. Again, he certainly has moderated socially. to the point where he is a moderate Republican. He has a lot of experience. He has done a lot of work with the economy. So many, many things that he brings to the table. And maybe at some time, you know, if you first you don't succeed, try again.
Absolutely. I think Kasich, as I said during the campaign, I thought out of the Republicans who were running for president, he was, I would not vote for him, but I could see him as the best qualified, just as in 2012, I thought John Huntsman, who interestingly now is the ambassador to Russia, which is really fascinating, I think was the best candidate. But of course, whoever I would say is the best candidate never goes anywhere. I've learned to understand that.
Do you think the stigma and the truth that John Kasich is a professional politician, he's been a representative and pretty much everything else, and he's been a commentator on TV, that this stigma...
He was on Fox News. It was actually very good. I thought it was one of the best shows on Fox News Channel.
He's a smart man. I mean, he doesn't quite have the charisma that some other candidates do, but how important is that? I think it is, but that's probably because of my broadcasting background. But is the stigma, Ron, that John Kasich is a professional politician, would that hurt him, or might it help him? We've tried having a non-professional politician, a total outsider, a businessman as president, and is it going to work out? Well, probably not. So we bring in a professional politician, and is that a good thing or a bad thing at this point?
I think after Trump, there's an argument we need someone with a lot of experience and background, and with competence, and with moderate Republicanism, with some conservative ideas. And I think, you know, of course, maybe I'm hurting him by saying this as a progressive professor, but I think he is probably the best person they could pick if they're trying to hold on to the White House, because I think Pence would be damaged by his connection to Trump. And I think the others who have been mentioned, Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who's interesting, and I like his principal views against Trump, or Tom Cotton, who is very loyal to Trump, they're mentioned also. They're much younger, but to me, they are too far to the right, particularly Cotton, but even Sasse. But I will say Sasse comes across as honest and dignified, and he has been a critic of Trump before the election and all the way through to now, and I give him credit for that.
Obligatory wisecrack, so he's not going to pick Cotton then.
Say that again. I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Obligatory wisecrack, Ron, he's not going to pick Cotton.
Well, you never know. Why? Because it would sound funny to say Trump Cotton or what?
Well, I just thought he was going to pick Cotton. Like, I'm thinking you pick Cotton. So I had to think. I'm sure he's heard that joke so many times.
Pence, Cotton, but... No, but I really don't know who he would pick. I just hope he would. I'm talking about Pence. I would just hope he would not pick someone as extreme on social views as his own. But who can say? Look, it could be Paul Ryan. The Speaker of the House could be picked. Although, not so sure that would actually happen, but that's a possibility too.
Well, there's a professional politician. What are your opinions on Paul Ryan? I mean, do you admire at least his staying power, but maybe not
honestly,
quite agree?
Honestly, 5 years ago, when he was picked by Mitt Romney, I really was critical of it, and I got blasted on several right-wing websites and was called all kinds of names because I had the gall to criticize Ryan. And I'm not impressed with Ryan ever since. You know, he's a man who's trying to destroy the social safety net completely. He apparently had that goal when he was in college, and he was all excited about it, getting rid of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I don't really understand the mental state of somebody who would feel that way back in college 30 years ago. So actually, in some ways, I think he might even be worse than Mike Pence in a way.
Let's just fast forward 1 year, Ron, and let's presume that Donald Trump is no longer president. Mike Pence and the mystery VP are in office. How much would Trump have scarred the party? Will the Republican Party be able to overcome? Maybe has it improved, or is it a permanent kind of a scarring due to the Trump administration?
Well, I think the fact that some Republicans have come out against him and many conservatives have, I think there's a possibility the Republican Party will survive, but it's definitely been damaged by Trump. And I don't really know how to figure out 2020, because right now the Democrats are in disarray. There's lots of people talked about it, but even within the Democratic Party now, we're having attacks by those on the left that is saying that Cory Booker, Senator from New Jersey, Senator Kamala Harris of California, and former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, all who happen to be African-American, are, quote, unacceptable because they have corporate support. And I am not a believer that we can purify, in quotes, the Democratic Party and only make it people on the left. I think that's destructive. I think we need to have people in the middle. So when we see elections coming up for moderate conservative Democrats like Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Claire McCaskill of Missouri and also I'm trying to think who the other one is for the moment. I can't think of who it is. I'm trying to think. But anyway, I would say those are people also, John Tester of Montana, I feel that, okay, they're not as liberal, as you would say, as most of the Democrats, but I think we have to have a party that accepts not just liberals, but also moderates, I think we have to realize that we're making the two-party system so extreme, and that is not good. We need to have the ability to cross the aisle, and people like the ones I mentioned should be backed and supported, because otherwise those seats are going to go Republican, and that will be worse.
It would seem at this point that Democrats have become rather liberal. We look at Bernie Sanders. He's probably the most liberal candidate ever to come close to winning the office. Would you agree with that?
Yes, but I don't think that he can really be a serious candidate at age 79 in 2020. And he's really not a Democrat. He joined and then he left. To me, Bernie Sanders had interesting ideas, but I do not think he is the future of the Democratic Party. And I'm sure on my blog, I have some people right now who comment who are debating that issue, and at least one of them probably is going to be angry at me for saying this. But I even wrote yesterday, in reaction to some people writing, that I do think that we cannot abandon the moderate or even conservative Democrats, because I don't think the party can win just as a left-wing party. It needs the center. And I think the Republicans also need the center. And I think the center is not Pence, and it's not Ryan. It's more like a Kasich type, I think, would be the center of the Republican Party. And I think that would be better for the country, because Kasich would know how to cross the aisle. And I think that moderate Democrats and even some liberal Democrats, but not as far left as Sanders, could also cross the aisle. And we need that, really, in order to get anything done in Congress. Look, Congress now has a 10% rating. How much lower can it go?
That's not too good. So we're saying you need to align yourself with either party, but don't necessarily think that Democrat means liberal and Republican means conservative. There's really much more to it, even though you look at Sanders, obviously he's very liberal. But even Clinton, she's middle of the road in a lot of economy issues. She's not.
Bill Clinton was. You know, I'm saying my name and my blog is progressive. I'm sure some people listening or reading will say, I'm not a progressive because of what I'm saying, but I think we got to live in a real world, and we can't just expect everybody to be a Bernie Sanders type figure to be in the Democratic Party. I don't think it's going to work.
Right, and as I've said, progressive and liberal and Democratic, they certainly have things in common, but they are different. They're different philosophies, but they have some things in common, some things not in common.
Yeah, I guess to some people, I'm a moderate liberal. I'm a Hubert Humphrey liberal from the 60s, and that's where I think it needs to be. But, of course, some would say that's 50 years ago, but that's when there was more cooperation in both parties, and we had people crossing the party line and working together on both sides in the 60s and 70s, and that's what I wish we could come back to.
And we've had Republicans that are a bit to the left, for example, John Anderson, former.
Yes, who ran for 1980 right. As an independent, and I, as I say, flirted with voting for him over Jimmy Carter, ended up voting for Jimmy Carter anyway. But my dissertation advisor for my doctorate, Arthur Schlesinger Jr., I found out recently, he passed away 10 years ago, had voted for Anderson, as had Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And that surprised me that they had. But there were Democrats who thought Carter was simply unacceptable and weak in 1980, so some did vote for Anderson. But at the end, Ronald Reagan won a majority, and Anderson did not really decide the election.
Of course, Anderson, along with another recent presidential candidate, Michael Dukakis, who were recently on with Scott Spears on his show, Scott Spears being the interviewer to the stars. But
and by the way, Michael Dukakis taught at Florida Atlantic University in the political science department in the 1990s, and I was an adjunct for many years there, and I got to meet him and invited him to one of my American government classes to talk about what it was, this was like 1993, what it was like to run for president in 1988. So we got to know each other, and when we saw each other, he'd say, how are you doing, Ron? I said, how are you doing, Mike? Instead of Governor Dukakis, and he actually is a real nice guy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. So Mr. Dukakis is a cool dude, and you liked meeting him. And it was a really interesting interview that Scott did with Governor Dukakis.
Was this recent?
Yeah, a couple months ago. It's in our archives on our website.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, but Dukakis now is in his 80s, but I think, you know, if it hadn't been for Ohio, if he had won Ohio, and there's some accusations that there might have been, you know, fooling around with the voting machines, that if he had won Ohio, possibly he could have won the presidency. I don't know how valid that is, but you know, he had a lot of troubles with that campaign because of the way the Bush senior campaign went on the attack against him, and he just came across as weak, unfortunately.
And, of course, the Ohio connection that I like to talk about, his running mate, Lloyd Bentsen, became Secretary of the Treasury under Mr. Clinton, and the treasurer was our very own regular guest on this station, Marion's own Mary Ellen Withrow. So there is some connection to Marion with Mr. Dukakis, and I guess so kind
of
cool
and
there.
Of course, we've been talking about Taft is Ohio and Kasich is Ohio. Ohio is the crucial state for a presidential election. I would say this, it's always been true. If you don't win Ohio, you're not winning the White House. Ohio is the most important state if you had to pick one out of all of them.
It would seem that way, judged on recent appearances by all the presidential candidates. We've been speaking with Dr. Ronald Fineman from Boca Raton, Florida, New York City native, expert on contemporary American history and politics and presidents. Thank you very much, Ron, for joining us on the show today, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you so much. I had a great time.
You are listening to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, signing off. Thank you for listening. I am Adam Lepp.
You're listening to WWGH Radio.